Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the L.A. Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we got a great show. We got our special guest tonight is Jimmy Griffin. He'll be coming up at 8:30. He's the former NAACP president in Connecticut. And he's also the founder of the Connecticut chapter of Economic Justice and Economic and Social Justice. And you can go to his Center for the Economic and Social Justice. All right.
Does he have a website?
He has a website, CESJ.org. You can check that out.
Oh, good.
And he's
been on our show.
He's very, very yes, and he's been a very he's very
he's worked very hard for his community.
Very very active community activist, and he's been very active in the Obama, working for Obama's election, and he'll back off a bit now, but we're going to talk to him about Obama's prospects, and also about how people are, how the black community is looking at Obama,
mm-hmm.
and as well as how the what he feels.
What the temperature is here in Connecticut for Obama.
And the strengths and weaknesses of the new campaign. And a lot of other things and things that are happening. He wants to talk about the social justice, and social and economic justice here in Connecticut and around the country. And,
so I'm looking forward to talking.
Yeah, he's a fascinating guy.
Nice man.
And then coming up, we got a short
segment, I think, with Woody, he hopes.
So a short segment with Woody and Ring. And then we got a special feature, another special feature. We're going to bring back John Brennan tonight. He should be back, should be here about 9:15, and he'll go to the end of the program. So we have a segment with John, segment with Woody, segment with our friend Jimmy Griffin. So it's going to be a jam-packed show.
Before then,
we're going to hit you with some news. Interesting thing that came up today, a couple of really interesting articles that came up today. One of them was my favorite. I couldn't believe this. I really was surprised. And this is from the Financial Times, all right? But what was great about it was the Israeli spokesman, this guy's a Jewish editor, telling the right wing to shut the hell up, to stop trying to help the trying to help them because they're hurting the Israelis. by being vocal, they're actually hurting the Israelis because
no one likes the right wing.
Well, for one thing, they don't. They're getting all the history wrong. And the other thing that it just makes them sound stupid.
Well, with supporters like
hurts.
Michelle Bachmann or Rick Perry, they wouldn't get anything right.
Well, that's what they're saying. And he starts out. It's by the Financial Times and their editor Simon Sharma.
Sharma. Israel's false friends on the U.S. right. It's the eve of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, so in the interest of a happy one amid the gathering global gloom, can I make a request of the Republican Christian evangelical politicians professing to be friends of Israel? Next time the temptation to sound off on the best interests of the Jewish state strikes, can it?
Oh, can it?
Can it? That's right. Israel has enough on its plate without being exploited as campaign fodder by blowhards who every time they open their mouths on the subject reveal their shocking ignorance of its past history, present political reality, and future security. According to Mitt Romney, Barack Obama has thrown Israel under the bus. When he's even listening to the president's speech, was he even listening to the president's speech at the UN? To what precisely could even the most hardline defender of Israeli foreign policy take exception exactly? I mean, really. Or take Governor Rick Perry, who lately has used every opportunity available to denounce President Obama's Middle East policy as some sort of betrayal of the Jewish state. This newfound vocalization comes hard on Mr. Perry's response to question about the potential for the Taliban to secure Pakistani nuclear weapons that consisted of comments so inanely incoherent that by comparison they made Sarah Palin look like Henry Kissinger. Somebody in Mr. Perry's entourage has discovered the phrase moral equivalence, as the governor can't stop using it at every opportunity he gets to assert that if President Obama treats Palestinian grievances and Israeli concerns with impartiality. Just setting aside the fact that no one in Israel and in the Jewish community worldwide would deny that Palestinians have suffered tragically over the past half century, Mr. Perry's assertion that President Obama treats rocket attacks by Hamas and Jewish settlement construction on the West Bank as equivalent to threats to peace manifestly absurd and unfounded.
But then Mr. Perry and others among the evangelicals aspiring to the White House, like Michelle Bachmann, share the fundamentalist vision of the settlers themselves, that they are fulfilling a biblical covenant on the land of Israel. When they evict the Palestinian villagers, demolish their houses, bulldoze their olive groves, and embitter the possibility of any future coexistence of the two people in their own respective states. Well, Mr. Perry is fond of calling President Obama naive, but every time he opens his mouth on this subject, he reveals his comical unfamiliarity with what has actually been happening in Israeli-Palestinian relations over the past 20 years. Insisting on direct negotiations between the parties, he fails to notice that that is exactly what happened at Oslo and at Sharm el-Sheikh, and in both cases the Palestinian Liberation Organization formally recognized Israel's right to exist and to live in peace and security within mutually agreed borders. When he upbraids President Obama for saying that the starting point of those frontiers ought to be the Green Line of 67, then that has been exactly the position of Israeli and U.S. governments, including Republican administrations, for a long time, with adjustments made through territorial swaths. That was the basis on which Ehud Olmert, not exactly a pinko peacenik, and Tripsi Livini negotiated with Mahmoud Abbas in 2008. If not made on the basis of the 1967 frontier, then it is incumbent on the likes of Mr. Perry, Mr. Romney, and Mrs. Bachmann to say where a secure boundaries might lie that would not involve the permanent Israeli occupation of the West Bank, inhabited as it is by a large Palestinian population. No Israeli government with any sense of secure future, from Menachem Begin to Ariel Sharon to Mr. Olmert, has clung to the dangerous fantasy of annexation involving, as it must, either the subjugation or the permanently alienated population or their catastrophic and immoral displacement.
This is an extremely long...
No, it ends.
Okay, but of course they are among the most feverishly intransigent and irredentist Jewish settlers who dream and speak of nothing else, and like the Christian evangelicals, involved the spiritual covenant promising Judea and Samaria to the Jews as enough of a warrant on which to base foreign and domestic policy. They represent the Israel Mr. Perry and Ms. Bachmann have in mind when they purport to defend its future. There is, of course, another Israel entirely, increasingly impatient with the settlers and with the ultra-Orthodox, who bear none of the burdens of serving in the military, yet sustain their religious schools from public funds while the rest of Israel's people live in increasingly economic distress as the furious mass demonstrations against Benjamin Netanyahu's government made abundantly clear. But to the likes of the radio ranter Glenn Beck, who had the chutzpah to present himself as restoring courage to Israel, I hadn't noticed that it had lost it, near the Western Wall in August, those hundreds of thousands of Israelis must have been stooges of the hard left. According to polling done by the Harry Truman Institute of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem in May 2010, a clear and growing majority of Israelis are willing to dismantle the majority of West Bank settlements as part of a comprehensive peace policy. To Texan evangelicals like Pastor John Hagee, who led the prayer assembly that kicked off Mr. Perry's campaign and who presides over Christian United for Israel, this secular, tolerant, pragmatic, culturally daring, ethnically diverse Jewish nation is not the authentic Israel at all. When Tel Aviv stages a massive and spectacular gay pride march, it turns into Sodom and is in the same state of rebellion against God's commandments that Mr. Hagee, in his Jerusalem countdown, asserted had been the right of anti-Semitism. This, of course, is the real divide in the politics of the Jews, as in the politics of Muslims and the politics of the U.S., between zealots and pragmatists, between those who ultimately shape their policy in accordance with revelation and those who depend on reason. When Mr. Perry says, as a Christian, I have a directive to support Israel, we know that it's his campaign manager up there who is whispering in his ear. If these were normal times, he was just another doctrinally driven fundamentalist. We could leave him and the rest of the evangelical tribe to their own imaginings. But they are aspiring to be to the presidency of the United States and are in a position, even before the campaign gets going in earnest, to do terrible harm to the people they profess to hold so close to their hearts. So, Lashana Tova to you, Governor Perry, but if you want to give the Jews anything approaching a happy new year, for God's sake, give it a rest.
Yeah, so this is from Financial Times. I was surprised that they said that, but I have to agree with them.
Well, they don't know American history, so why should they know Israeli history?
Yeah. A very, very interesting thing came up the other day, and I posted it on my Facebook account, because this thing was an unusual thing from the Department of the Treasury, from the U.S. Treasury Department. It says, who increased the debt? Well, they have a graph here, and they have the top, they have President Reagan from 1981 to 1989 raised the debt, the national debt, by 189%. Imagine that. Now,
this is one of the worst presidents we ever had.
Up to almost 200% increase in the debt ceiling during his administration. Now, President Bush, right after that, raised the debt ceiling 55% above what was already raised.
Above the 189%.
Reagan's 189%.
So half of 189
so, yeah.
is 93%.
Right.
So he raised it 93% more on top of that.
Yeah, 55% of the 189%.
Yeah.
You know. So if you look at that, now that was between the Bush and Reagan years,
mm-hmm.
okay, from 1981 to 1990.
Republican presidents, folks.
Yeah. They raised it 189. Plus 55% of that, so 200 and, what was it, 93. It would be 93 and 189, and half of that is what? What did we say?
294.
That would be 94, right? 189 and 94 would be 270-something.
290.
So between Bush and from 1981 to 1993, Bush and Reagan raised the debt of this country
almost
300%.
Both
Republicans. Now, Clinton, between 1993 and 2001, only raised the debt by 37%.
On top of that.
And he balanced the budget.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, Bush Jr. comes in.
Another Republican.
And he raises the debt by 115% over what it was. All right? Now, Obama, between 2009 and 2011, has only raised the debt ceiling, the debt by 16%. And that's U.S. federal stuff. I mean, that's amazing. Now, what happened was basically between the Bush and between the Clinton administration. But remember, Clinton paid off the debt and brought the country into a balance. But under the Bush administration and Republican Congress, they raised the debt by 115%. All right.
And was it Reagan's Congress Republican?
Republican.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And Obama, in his time in office, in his 4 years, has only raised the debt by 16% overall. Because you got to remember, he inherited this enormous freaking deficit. All right.
Built up by Reagan.
And the bailouts. And interestingly enough, the bailouts were under, everybody forgets that the bailouts were under Bush.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
They were already begun.
Yeah, they were under Bush. So, yeah, he was stuck with this enormous debt. So, anyway, that was kind of an interesting thing. So, we're going to go on. There's a couple other quite staggering things.
So, I think it was interesting to note that those were all Republicans giving subsidies to big business and to their buddies.
Yeah. Yes. So, anyway, hang on 1 second here. Let's go back and see what else I got. I got some other goodies. I thought this was interesting. I forget how long this is. I'm going to check, though. I forgot. It's 4 minutes. But I think it's interesting because anybody who's following the protests and on Wall Street, okay, this is a Russian TV report. It's only about 4 minutes long. But they talk about the protest beatings and continued until morale improves, supposedly. I'm not sure what that means exactly, but this is a good interview, and the guy talks about this.
Well, tell people what's happening. People are down on Wall Street.
People are on Wall Street getting beaten up. Okay, the police brutality down there is becoming obscene, all right? And a lot of people are getting beat up down there and dragged. They're arrested. They just arrested 80 people. All right.
They're protesting the bankers.
They're spraying them. Well, that's what the whole occupation is. And most people right now will probably know, all right, about the occupation on Wall Street, okay?
I bet a lot of people don't.
Well, they should. Yeah, the media has blacked it out pretty well, but there's over 50,000 people down there on Wall Street marching daily. They're occupying. They're sleeping over in the parks down there, okay, and protesting Wall Street. Okay.
Is that part of We Are Change?
They're part of it, but everybody's part of it. I mean, this is just a major problem.
Police brutality running wild in New York. Americans dragged, punched, and pepper sprayed.
Woman on the ground screaming, crying after getting assaulted brutally by police.
Over 80 people were arrested over the weekend at peaceful anti-Wall Street protests. Among them, Eric, beaten up and held for 36 hours. The deep scars on his hands speak for themselves.
Wow.
The activist is shocked by the price Americans are paying for speaking out about injustice.
The police response has been overly violent and brutal. They maced 5 women. They collected them around a net and then maced them, and they weren't even warned. The captain stepped up, maced their faces, and then tried to run away and avoid cameras that were around.
The Occupy Wall Street movement was launched to kickstart America's own Arab Spring.
This is a historical moment. This is the beginning of the people's revolution. This government is not working in the best interests of the people or this nation.
But for now, it remains a fringe movement with the anticipated 20,000 people yet to gather.
It'd be nice if it grew into something like what happened in Egypt, you know. But, you know, it might be wishful thinking, you know, because the people here are completely brainwashed.
It took America's mainstream media a week to catch up with the demonstrations. Protesters say some networks deny them coverage.
CNN and Fox, I'm really disappointed. And yesterday, the police responded in huge, extreme brutality. And we were calling them constantly, and they shut down their headquarters. They said, and then we mentioned Occupy Wall Street, they'd hang up on us.
Others say the outlets that are covering the Occupy Wall Street rallies are not doing nearly enough.
Whispers, a couple things. There's, you know, but it's... People don't want people to know that this is going on. Are you kidding? There's been coverage, but it's like, you know, oh, a bunch of people done one article.
Alternative news sources are the ones spreading the word far and wide.
It's actually expected that the mainstream media would not cover, you know, this type of movement. You know, what would they, right? You know, they actually benefit from the system, you know, staying the way it is. So I'm not surprised that there has been a complete blackout from the media.
Twitter and other social networking websites are bringing people out. As 3 years into a recession, Wall Street has still not been held accountable for triggering the common American's worst nightmare.
Wall Street has ripped off the American people to no end. Mortgage fraud, foreclosure, I mean, income disparity throughout this country, it's just off the hook. And the main reason I'm here is because of the corporate media blackout, the mainstream media blackout. You're only getting the truth from alternative news sites.
One in six Americans are living below the poverty line.
Unemployment is at a, you know, this is the highest it's been in a generation, and, you know, people just can't find jobs. So we have to send a message. We have to send a message. We're paying attention, and we want things to change. We want the system to change.
But the system is far from ready to change. It is yet to start taking people's outrage seriously. While demonstrators marched the streets of the financial districts, bankers shamelessly toasted life with champagne right in their faces.
The U.S. political and corporate elite embraces uprisings when they're far from American soil. But when similar events take place at home, bankers, politicians, largely the media, and many Americans turn a blind eye. While the financial district erupts with brutality and outrage, the rest of New York goes about its business as usual. Cecilia Turkanah, RT, New York.
It's a sick situation.
That's a disgrace.
Yep.
And it's not being broadcast and talked about.
Yep. It's pretty sick. Pretty sick business. Hold on a second. Trying to get out here, and I can't. See, Jimmy just posted on this wall, so he sent me a message, and I have to get it, but I can't, for some reason, hook up.
Stay with us,
yeah,
folks. Leo is having a lot of problems here. He needs to get a message from our guest. He sent him one. He doesn't see it.
Okay. He's saying he's all set. Jimmy just sent me a message. See you in a few minutes. And for all of those in the northwest corner of Connecticut and northeastern New York, tune in and I will be on in about 10 minutes.
Okay.
That's all. I thought it might be more important. I wanted to make sure you didn't say it couldn't be on there or something. All right. So my next article is actually, where are we here? What's more important? I'm just trying to see what's more important. I think to get about 5 minutes. This is quite good. We can go with this one as well. Ecstasy, it turns out, Okay. Do a little health issue here. UnionLeader.com expresses that lemonade raids, farm stands, and local power. In New Hampshire, this is from the Union Leader, which is New Hampshire's main paper. In New Hampshire, who should regulate children's lemonade stands?
No one.
The correct answer is no one. But common sense does not always prevail at the local or state levels. Legislators will consider a bill next year that would return to the state the power to regulate farm stands. The Department of Health and Services wants the authority because farm stands now sell milk, cheese, jams, and other perishable items and could be contaminated if improperly processed or kept at the wrong temperature. At a House Commerce and Consumer Affairs Subcommittee meeting, Donna Morrow, a Republican from Windham, asked the representative from HHS if any of these items sold at the New Hampshire farm stand had ever made people sick. The answer, not to the HHS representative's knowledge, in New Hampshire Business Review reporting.
So the state wants the power to regulate farm stands because some farmer might sell warm milk someday? Way to show confidence in New Hampshire's farmers. But back to the lemonade stands. Legislators on the subcommittee wanted to know if HHS would use this new power to regulate children's lemonade stands. The answer was no. Representative Jen Coffey, Republican Andover, said she had heard that Concord regulated lemonade stands. When HHS officials pointed out that doing so would be within the power of the local Board of Health, not the state, Representative Andrew Mons, not usually one to support expanding the power of the state, suggested having the state take over food inspections in towns that went after lemonade stands. What a bad idea. The smaller and more local the agency, the more directly accountable to the people. If local governments go after kids' lemonade stands, the right response is not to give their power to the state, where less accountable busybodies could replicate the error on a larger scale in the future. It is to let the local community deal with it. Ditto for the farm stands.
Anyway, that's so foolish.
That's
a strange situation, no doubt. So,
can't even have a farm stand or a lemonade. This is ridiculous, this over-regulation.
This is a cute little ditty. It was a cartoon, actually, that came up, and I posted it, and I got quite a bit of activity on it. But it was really funny. You had the Wile E. Coyote putting up a sign that says health tip. And it says, if you can't afford a doctor, go to an airport. You'll get a free x-ray, a breast exam, and if you mention Al-Qaeda, you'll get a free colonoscopy. that was really good. This is the area. Okay. He thinks we're on there for some reason. I don't know why. But, okay. But anyway, so in the meantime, what I'm going to do is I'm going to call Jimmy right now. He's waiting for us.
Okay.
And just dial him up here. And hang on 1 second. Well, in just 1 second, we'll have Jimmy Griffin with us. And he is the former president of the NAACP. As well as the founder of the Center for Economic and Social Justice in Connecticut, and talking to him right in just a second here.
Hello.
Hey, Jimmy, how are you?
How you doing?
All right.
How you doing, Ella?
Hi, how are you, Jimmy? This is Lila.
Hi, Lila. How you doing?
Yeah.
We're fine. One of the things I wanted to let you know is that...
We're not on WQQQ anymore. They closed down, actually, and became NPR, all right?
Oh, but, so you're... What are you on now?
Well, we're on Blog Talk Radio. We've been doing this show for 5 years as well. We just closed down this year, and everybody had to leave, and because it turned into an NPR station. But
Blog.com. Okay, well, that's all right. Well, people would just be trying. If they're trying to tune in, they'll just get the wrong station.
Yeah. Well, I posted it on, it's not actually Block Talk Radio, and I posted it on there on the site, so people should, if they're looking, should find it. But we'll mention it again in case anyone else is listening out there that, you know, that it's posted on our website, it's posted on this, on a Facebook, as well as all over the place on the Internet.
Okay. All right, well, I posted the old one up there, but that's all right. That's on the Center for Economic Justice, but that's okay.
Yeah, I was just looking, and I said, gee, we better clarify that with Jimmy.
Well, we're doing pretty well. We got a lot of listeners. We've got thousands of weekly listeners here on this show, so we're moving right along.
But one of the things we wanted to ask you was, as a member of the Black community, we wanted to talk a little bit about Obama, what you feel his track record has been so far in the Black community in Connecticut and nationally.
Yeah, do you think he's still got the same support, or what's your feeling out there?
Yeah, I think he still has solid support. It's just that people are getting disillusioned, I guess, because let's face it, the guy's had a rough way to go. You know, he can't get any cooperation from anybody and on the Republican side, it looks like. You know, they're out to get the guy, and they said it. I mean, they've been pretty obvious about it. There's nothing secret about this. So, you know, right now, I guess, you know, we're just going to have to play it by ear. I don't see Blacks just running away that easily. You know, I think they understand the whole dilemma that he's facing, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, the guy just got a bad deal. It's a bad time. Bush left him in a hell of a mess.
Oh, boy, you got that right. But
we were just reading before you came on that the U.S. Treasury just posted a graph that showed the Reagan administration had over 189, they increased the debt by 189%, okay, during his 8 years as president. Bush raised that amount by 55%, all right, Bush won. Clinton only raised the debt by 37%, okay, and Bush 2 raised it by 115%,
yeah,
all right, Bush 2. Now, Obama only raised it by 16%. And look at the flack he got.
It's all the media, and the political establishment that runs or the backers that run the media, they put the spin on it. I mean, let's face it, the guy's got a bad, he's getting a bad rap, and it's hard to function out there when you don't have the media sort of helping you out.
But I gotta say, he hasn't helped himself out too well either, though. Boy, he's made some serious PR blunders,
I think he's been a little bit too soft. To live up to his. What he called his expectations. I guess he thought he could really talk to the Republicans. I mean, he thought that he could, sit down and bring the country together. And, they're just not going to have it. So he made some miscalculated moves. They're just not going to listen. So he could just forget it, it looks like at this point.
What do you think about his jobs proposal? Do you think that would be helpful to the Black community?
It could be helpful, but it's complicated. Like most things are. Who are the businesses that are really going to get the breaks? Are these businesses the kinds of businesses that are going to hire African Americans? There's a lot to be desired because that's what they're targeting. I guess they're targeting businesses to get businesses to create jobs, and it's you know, it's a sticky situation. It's hard to really look. You're looking at a 16-point-something unemployment rate among African Americans versus a 9-point across the board. So that's like a big difference. That's like about an 8 percentage points difference.
Now, Jim, the concentration though. Of the black community, the black population, though, there are in areas there's a lot of areas that have just been devastated by unemployment, in areas that have a higher concentration of
African Americans,
Detroit or Michigan,
Washington.
Well, I don't even know if there's anything in Washington other than government, but is it isolated pockets, Jim, or is it like just across the board?
No, it's this is not just hitting the blacks that are normally
right.
hit. Already underemployed or unemployed blacks. This is hitting blacks that have made it to the middle class, that had high paying jobs in corporate America. A lot of those jobs are gone. A lot of those mortgages are lost, the big mortgages they had. There's a whole loss of almost a large percent of the black middle class is being lost in this whole thing. So this is not just confined to just lower black employment. It's a big thing in the upper middle class and middle class African-American community now, and people are losing property and all kinds of things are going on. So this is not confined to just a segment of the population. It's a large percentage of African Americans out of work.
Have Obama's policies done anything at all to alleviate any of that? In any areas?
What I'm finding out is that no one seems to have an economic policy, that's revolutionary. I mean, what you need is a whole revamping of your economic system in this country, and nobody's come up with a proposal. That's one of the reasons that I got hooked up with this the Center for Economic and Social Justice, and we set up a chapter in Waterbury now, because I think that the focus of the civil rights movement is going in the wrong direction. It's not focused on what it should be focused on, and that's the economy. I think that if you look at the economy, that's where all the problems really stem from. If you have a bad economy, you're going to have a shaky educational system. If you have a bad economy, you're going to have a shaky medical system. So all of these social services and everything else that are derived from our country and the government is basically a part of the economics of this country. And if you don't come up with an economic, solid economic proposal, we're in trouble. So what we're talking about, and I just got named, as a matter of fact, the Connecticut coordinator for the Capital Homesteading. I don't know if you're familiar with Capital Homesteading. Capital Homesteading goes all the way back to Abraham Lincoln, actually, when he came up with the New Frontier programs. And what it does is basically gives property to each individual, gets a certain piece of property or gets a share in the American dream, and this is a whole radical concept, but it's about the only thing left that's going to pull us out of the quagmire that we're in.
Well, I think you're on the right track with the economy, because that was where Martin Luther King was going. He realized that it wasn't just blacks who were being affected by the economic policies of this country. It was poor and middle class, everyone. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say exactly what's happening is that this is a holistic approach. This crosses race, ethnic, all backgrounds. What this is talking about is giving everybody an equal opportunity to have a piece of the American dream.
And when they talk, when they talk about the new buzzword on the mass media with the Republicans is class warfare, they're right. It is class warfare, but it's the upper class against the middle class and the poor, and that's how we're polarized right now.
Yeah, well, you know, when you got 2% or less than 2% of the nation, I mean, of the population, controlling 90% of the wealth, you got some issues. You know, that's just not balanced. We're in a kingdom rather than a democracy at this particular point. You know, going back to medieval times, you're talking about class, again, class systems from the top down to the bottom. And we're getting a bigger, lower class of people in this country, and we're losing the middle class. And, you know, and there's few people that are controlling the processes are remaining right where they are. And there's no trickle-down theory.
Oh, absolutely right. It doesn't trickle down at all.
Now, I was looking at your site, and I came across a number of interesting things. One was that Just Third Way, okay, is what you have, the Just Third Way in four easy pieces, which I thought was interesting because, you're advocating dignity and empowerment with the human person, binary economics, two independent factors, labor and capital, three essential principles of economic justice, which is the principle of participation, principle of distribution, and principle of harmony, and then the four pillars of a just free market, which is limited economic power of the state, the full rights of the private property, free, open, and anti-monopolistic markets, and universal access to capital ownership. Now, those are all lofty ideals, and they're supposed to be protected under the under our Constitution, no?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. This is the whole thing. The federal, what's going on is that the Federal Reserve, okay, which is established in the early 1900s, the Federal Reserve is really not it's not a quote unquote, it's a private bank. It's a bank of millionaires, of billionaires, of trillionaires. That's what that's about. You know, and they control the global economy, the feds. So what we're doing is we're saying, let's tap into the feds. Let the feds feed into this this recovery. Just like they bail out the banks, let them bail out the people. You know, instead of bailing out Main Street, let's bail out the neighborhoods, that kind of stuff. So this is what this Capital Homesteading Act is all about.
Yeah, a lot of that could be done very easily. All we have to do is have our own state banks.
Well, how are you going to?
It a Citizens Land Bank. That's a part of this too. They've got what you call a Citizens Land Bank, and that's property that's sitting around that the government actually owns. You turn it over to the people. All right, and it's a community investment corporation. Right? It allows the residents of a community to share in the control of profits associated with land planning and development. Those are the kinds of innovative things that have to happen in order for this country to turn around. They're never going to turn around the way it's going. It's just not going to happen.
Well, and I think those that are captaining the ship in this direction know exactly that it's not going to turn around.
So that's why something like this, you can't get something like this across. I met with Lieberman, Blumenthal, and Murphy. We went in and I took Norm Curlin, who's an economist, who's the president of the National Center for Economic and Social Justice. We went in and we had three meetings in one day in Washington, D.C. I went down to D.C. and met with him. And I set up the appointments because we were trying to find some way that we could get this into the mainstream and have a discussion about it, because one of the problems is that there's so many things being kicked around on the Hill, and there's so many lobbyists out there. In order for you to get something in the door, it's a big deal. So we did break into the doorway, and we talked to these people, but there's some real serious issues. Nobody wants to really take on this kind of a challenge because of the politics in Washington.
Yeah, this Homestead Act, the capital homesteading, I'm just going to it here. The Capital Homestead Act is a comprehensive national economic strategy for empowering every American citizen, including the poorest of the poor, with the means to acquire, control, and enjoy fruits of productive corporate assets. My question is, with millions, like I think we have like 3 million foreclosures right now, all right? Is there any possible way that this Homestead Act could relate to these people, to these foreclosures?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You have the summary. If you see the summary, you know, all this stuff. Some of the things have been in functioning already, like the employee stock ownership plan. Those things are in place in a couple companies around the country that have worked well. And, you know, so ESOP is one of the things that came out of this capital homesteading. So if you were to take this whole act and you got it, if you moved it forward, this could impact, like I said, it's going to impact the whole economy. I mean, it'll revamp the whole economy. It has a tax part to it. It has balanced budget and zero inflation rates. It has all kinds of things within this. It's a massive piece of legislation if we could get it moving forward. The thing is to get it out there and, you know, pass the lobbyists and really get it on the front burner and have it, like we're having this discussion now. People don't know about capital homesteading. So if they don't know about it, then the only way they're going to find out about it is that we're going to have discussions about it on networks. And I don't know, like you said, you've got a couple thousand listeners or whatever. But those people, in turn, will have to educate themselves. And, you know, the educational process goes on. And hopefully by 2012, and that's what our target date is, that we can get something up before this national election and have it debated, so that, you know, there'll be something to argue over on the economic front.
Mm-hmm. So, were any of those three Connecticut representatives and senators, were they have any interest in any of this at all?
Yeah, well, you know, you know how they are. They'll give you an audience. I think that out of all three of them, I think that Murphy's top chief of staff had, his name is Creighton. I think he had more interest than anyone else. He liked the part. There's a part in here, I guess, you know, about the Pope, and there's some Catholic values, and also, as a matter of fact, this is spiritually based. This whole concept is based on a concept that comes out of a shared vision. Okay, and it talks about towards a more free and global, just global. So we're talking like Africa is like talking to us right now. Some other third world countries, but South Africa is where we're looking for. Probably they might pick it up before the United States does. That's how people are looking at this all over the world right now.
This is the Homestead Act.
They're looking at it all over the at different places. This is a global economy that we're dealing with, and everything now has to be dealt with on a global manner. Now we're trying to get something to come out of the national any nation, to tell you the truth, but America will be the prime nation because of the situation where it's set up here. But we're trying to do that. We're trying to get it to any country that we can at this particular time. And, you know, the United States is being targeted, of course.
Now, do you have any forums or anything like that planned to talk about this in Connecticut?
Yeah, we're getting ready to, hopefully, we're trying to put together an economic summit. Now, the government just opened, which incidentally, he'll announce some kind of summit. He's got job summit or something he's having tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're looking to put together something up in Hartford around the beginning of November before the election, just a week before the election or something, to have some people come in from the national office to come down to Hartford, and we're trying to bring some people from different businesses around the state of Connecticut together in Hartford to have a mini summit to talk about this whole idea. And then we'll have the experts there to, you know, really break it down in case there's any questions about it.
Now, this is next November?
We're talking 6 weeks from now, five weeks from now.
Oh, wow.
Be sure to let us know if that happens.
Yeah, I'd like to attend ourselves.
We'd like to attend ourselves.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely let you know. I'll put it up on, it'll be up on Facebook, so, you know, just check out my Facebook page, and you definitely, I'll let people know. We've sort of glued it in. We're just basically trying to lock in a place and a time and stuff like that right now. We've sort of got some players in place. And, you know, if we can pull it off, we're going to pull it off. If we can't, we'll do it after, you know, within the next couple of months. So we got a window of 30 to 60 days that we're working with.
Getting down to a more local question for you, how is Hartford doing right now?
And what about?
And Connecticut overall, but Hartford, Waterbury.
Hartford. I mean, it has its issues. All your urban areas are in trouble. Waterbury has the highest unemployment rate in the state. You know, and especially among minorities. So, you know, we're not doing that great. Our economy is sort of stable without the jobs aspect. Things are looking pretty good as far as the fiscal responsibility of the city, but it's a lot of people hurt. I mean, if you saw a television today, then you know what's going on. They announced an allowance, a food allowance program or something, and Christ, they've got lines all over the state of Connecticut. It looks like a depression line or something, the way these people are coming out. So something's going on out there. People are hurt.
Well, they just announced we're in worse shape than they were during the Depression.
That's right. They just announced that. We saw it on the news tonight that the housing market.
They're covering up this whole idea that we're in a recession right now.
No, but sure. But they showed that the housing market was down 30%. 30.9%, okay, between 2006 to the present, right? 30.9%. In the Great Depression between 1929 and 1933, all right, at the height of the was it 1933 or 1937? At the height of the Depression, was down to they were at 30%. The reduction in home values at that time was down 30%. So we're worse than they were, okay, and during the Great Depression.
During that time,
as far as the decline in home values. So it's really a staggering figure when you think about it. And everybody is getting clobbered. Every homeowner in the country is clobbered, you know, regardless of where their economic status is, you know. That's hurting the guy with a $100,000 house or the guy with a $1 million house. It's say, you know, they're down 30%. You know, so
no, it's not easy out there. But things are not looking much better. They don't look too much rosier, that's for sure. So, you know, but you got to hang in there. You got to do what you got to do. Like I said, this is where I'm trying to put focus at right now. Is you know, because all politics is local, and I think that's where we really miss the boat at, a lot of us. I mean, a lot of groups miss the boat because they're so focused on what's going on in Washington that they forget that everything starts from the bottom up. It doesn't start from the top down. And so local politicians really control whatever comes down. And the problem is that the people are not involved enough on the local level, and they're looking to the president, and when they should be looking to the mayor in a lot of instances. That's where the problem is. People are misguided when it comes to government. They don't understand it. They're apathetic because they don't understand it. And it's getting worse rather than better.
Well, you got a point there. That's true. We have to do a better job in educating our children on how government works and that they should be really active on a grassroots level to make any change. You're absolutely right.
You see, where it goes.
I mean, I noticed a lot of people on your Facebook and so on, and you get a lot of how are you how are people responding to you? Are you gaining any excitement here or any?
I keep some stuff going on. As a matter of fact, I got probably one of the most controversial walls and on Facebook around here, and that's because I mix it up. I talk the truth to power. I don't bite my tongue, and people may not like what I say a lot of times, but I just tell it like it is. And I get a lot of people that are afraid to post anything on Facebook. There's a lot of people out there that read what you put on Facebook, and you would never know that they're reading it until you run into them in a supermarket or if you run into them somewhere. I mean, I've got a lot of people I never even thought that even knew who I was, all right, that would run up to me in the grocery. I'm talking about, all walks of life. I'm not just talking about, blacks or Latinos. I'm talking about everybody, people from all walks of life that are running to you in a grocery store and say, oh, you're my Facebook friend. Or I read, your post. I like your stuff, And you wouldn't know it if you didn't come out there, because a lot of these people don't post anything on Facebook. They'll read. They'll go from page to page. But, they're absorbing a lot of stuff. And I'm getting a lot of feedback that when I say something, a lot of people are feeding into it. I don't know whether it's good or bad in a lot of instances, but I know that they're listening. If you got somebody listening, that's half of the battle.
So do you have some prominent national figures involved in the Capitol Homestead Act?
Well, you said I know you were talking to Lieberman,
who support it? Who actively
supports there's
a core group. The group that I'm dealing with are a bunch of intellectuals, okay,
mm-hmm.
who run a Washington think tank that's been around since 1984. All right, and they're a bunch of real bright guys and women, okay, but. One of the things that they never really came out and did was, get out here in the hoods on the local levels and try to really build a grassroots organization. So that was one of the shortcomings. And what we're trying to do is reverse that, okay? So this chapter in Waterbury was one of the first effective chapters to be set up in the whole country, and they've been around for years. And now I'm looking at Connecticut as some place, because I've got my page up here and we've got 900 members or so. As the page grows and the group grows, people talk about this like yourself. You went to the website, there's a lot of good stuff up there, but it's a massive amount of information. So we try to nail it down so that we could target like Capital Homesteading, the third just third way, and things like that, so that people don't get too far off base, right, because there's just an enormous amount of information on that website. It's amazing the stuff that's up.
Well,
I was just looking at some of this information. It just says ZESJ's macro and microeconomic concepts and applications derived from economic theories and principles of economic justice developed by the late lawyer economist Louis Kesso and Aristotelian philosopher Mortimer. I mean, they're involving. I mean, these guys really put together this their philosophy through a number of philosophers. And
this guy Norm Curlin has been around the block a few times. He came out of the University of Chicago. Brilliant guy. He was out there with like people like Kelso and
I wasn't doing radio. I wasn't talking with you.
We're kind of running out of time here. We got another guest coming up, but I want to thank you so much for being on.
All right. Thank you guys for inviting me. And how do you pick this up? Does this go on a website or a radio stream?
Yeah, you go to LA Steel Show. You can just Google up the LA Steel Show.
LA Steel Show, okay.
Actually, go to blogtalkradio.com. That's the network.
Blogtalkradio.com. .com. Okay.
I'm going to search. Show.
And then you come up to the main page, and you go into just put in LA Steel Show, and that'll go to the page.
Okay, so, beautiful. All right, look, I know you guys got to go, so we'll be talking soon.
Thank you so much, and I hope to have you back on again. We'll update us to the progress of your group, and especially this conference coming up that we hope to have.
All right, see you guys later, okay?
Take care now.
Bye. Bye-bye.
All right. That was Jimmy Griffin.
Hit my music.
Get it on about CESJ.org.
And now we're ready for In the Ring with Woody. We'll play
Thank you, Lila. Stellar introduction, and once again, I've been preceded by a very interesting guest.
You have been.
Good evening, sports fans. Watch your heads on the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody. Tonight, I'm on the road. The topics will be my Stone Cold locks, and I'm going to do a little baseball in depth. Okay, now, when I made my picks last week, I was riding a little high with 5 wins, no losses, and 1 tie, or a push, as we call it in the gambling world. Well, how soon the mighty fall? It happens quick. I went to 5-3-1, 3 losses. None of the teams I picked covered. For future reference, it's always tough to be a road team and to be giving points away. Even if the team that you're playing is a lot of times what they call a cream puff, in the NFL, home field advantage is really a big, big thing. So it's very difficult to give a home team points. And, just very difficult. So that's why I was 0-3 last week. But it's a new week, and I'm ready to roll with some new picks. So, this week, I have Baltimore. They are at home against the Jets. Jets are getting 3.5. Not going to be enough. So, I'll take Baltimore -3.5. I will also take my team, the Chicago Bears. They are home against the Panthers. They're given 6.5. So I like the Bears giving 6.5. They're at home. Like that very much. Now, the Lions. They are traveling to the confines of Dallas. Lions have been playing some great football. They haven't been a winning team in quite a many year now. And they're going into Dallas. They'll be getting some points. And I think it's going to be a very interesting game. You know, they're getting points. Dallas is a, you know, big stadium. It should be a lot of crazy crowd and everything else. And I'm sure Dallas would love to put Detroit in their place. So I think it's going to be a fun game to watch. And, you know, with Detroit getting 3.5, I'm going to take them. I think that's what it's going to be, 3.5. There is no line posted as of yet, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be 3.5, maybe even 4, but we'll just have to wait and see. So those are my picks for this week. I have Baltimore minus, Bears minus, and Detroit plus. So we'll see if I can get a couple wins. Squeak out a few wins this week. Should be very interesting. I watched a few of the games this past weekend. Some interesting stuff went down. I was relying heavy on the New England Patriots, a team that I thoroughly hate. I can't stand Tom Brady or anything from near or around Boston. And, you know, I thought they would certainly would do it to the Bills, but they didn't. Tom Brady threw uncharacteristic 4 interceptions, 3 in the second half. Very sloppy. That's not the kind of game I would expect out of Tom Brady. Maybe the Bills are for real. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But, boy, they certainly look like it. Their defense looked good. Their quarterback is looking good. I mean, wow, I think it would be great for the NFL if the Buffalo Bills became a good team again. They haven't been good for, oh, God, it's been such a long time. But if anyone remembers, it was years ago. It seemed like, you know, they were always the team from the AFC going to the Super Bowl. Not that they ever won, but they were always there. Very interesting. The Steelers, although they won, played another very sloppy game. They put the ball on the ground a lot. It was just a very, very sloppy game. Now, a lot of people are saying the Steelers are looking old and just, you know, not with it. Their offensive line isn't what it used to be. And, geez, I'm almost starting to agree. I didn't believe it when I heard the whispers earlier in the season. But maybe it's true. The Steelers are definitely a team that bears watching. We'll just have to keep our eye on them and see if they're slipping, as you know, some smarter minds have said that they are. So we'll just have to keep our eyes on that. There's another game that I found to be very interesting. Of course, it's eluding me at this time. So, oh, no, absolutely not. My Oakland Raiders handed it to the New York Jets. I knew it would be a tough game for the Jets. You know, they had to travel to the West Coast. That's always difficult. The time change and the travel and everything else is just always very difficult. And the Raiders, you know, they did work. Scored a lot of points. They looked very tough. Raiders having an enormous amount of speed at almost every position, and they really did it to the Jets. Once you get outside the tackle box, you know, if you're running, you know, they're very slow to the ball outside the tackles, the Jets. So they got a lot of problems. And, you know, their quarterback got banged up pretty good, too. Got himself a little shiner, might have got his nose broke. So, but he's a tough kid, and he'll hang in there. But, you know, if the Jets certainly aren't looking as, like, you know, as tough as they usually are. Their defense certainly isn't looking all that great. You know, it's definitely a far cry from the kind of D they've been playing. And to me, there is no great defense in the league right now. So, if this is what the NFL is going to be, I'm really going to, you know, I need to see good defense in the NFL. You know, scoring and all that jazz is fun and, you know, everything. But good defense, good hard hitting and stuff like that interests me a much greater amount. Moving on, baseball. Very, very interesting stuff going on. The Boston Red Sox are caving. The Yankees handled their business this weekend. They took 2 out of 3 from them at Yankee Stadium, and it could have been a full-blown sweep if Proctor hadn't served up a 3-run home run to Ellsbury. The Yankees are certainly playing good baseball at the right time of year. this is when you want to be playing good ball. You want to gel together. Everyone seems to be clicking. A lot of team-type victories. A little bit of here, a little bit of there. This guy's hitting. That guy's hitting. The bullpen's doing what it's supposed to. Starting pitchers are going as many innings, you know, as you expect. So Yankees are starting to click at the right time. Red Sox, however, I just don't know what's going on there. It just seems like it, things have compounded. You know, I think it's a little bit of pressure. I think injuries have certainly been a factor. I think taking Kevin Youkilis out of that lineup has really done some damage. It's just not as scary without Youkilis in that lineup. Youkilis is another guy, you know, he's got power and he takes a lot of pitches, and that puts pressure on pitchers. But without him in the lineup, man, I really think it definitely hurts the lineup. And so the Red Sox, you know, whether they make it to the playoffs or not, I don't believe they're going anywhere. If they do even make it to the playoffs, I think what's going to happen is I think there's going to be a one-game playoff between them and the Tampa Bay Rays. And that won't be good for either team because they're going to have to use their best pitcher, and then they won't have their best pitcher for the, you know, to start the next series. So whoever, I mean, they're already behind the eight ball. So it's going to be a very tough road for no matter who it is, whether it's going to be the Red Sox or the Rays, you know, that makes the final playoff spot in the American League. So that's going to be very, very interesting. Another interesting thing that's happened, Jorge Posada, one of the Yankees' core four, as they call him, and it's now a core three. The core four was Mariano, Pettit, and Jeter, and obviously Jorge. You know, Pettit was the first of the core four to step down, and now we have three left. And I think, you know, it was questionable as to whether Posada was going to be on the playoff roster. But he's had a couple of big hits this week. He helped the Yankees clinch the American League East. Big hit for Jorge. It was very emotional. Everybody was rooting for him, so it's good stuff. And he does hit well from one side of the plate, so you got to like that. So, good for Jorge. He's going to make the roster. And, next week at this time, hopefully I'll be able to talk a little bit about who's winning and losing in the playoffs. So, that's it for this week. Special shout-out to my buddy Ed Money. Ed, nice to have you listening. Shout-out to Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, Greg at AFS, everyone at the Northeast Athletic Club. All right, everybody, enjoy autumn. Summer's over.
Enjoy this song. We'll be right back after this.
few minutes. I'm going to play a got an article here where there was a citizen's arrest on Donald Rumsfeld.
No, they didn't accomplish an attempt.
They attempt. They never accomplish it, unfortunately. But they do try. And this was by...
Raw Replay.
Yeah. Hang on one second.
Hopefully this will come up.
Yeah. Cool.
Veterans
and,
attempt citizens' arrest of Rumsfeld in Boston at the South Meeting House.
Yeah, Veterans for Peace, a bunch of good, great organization.
Several members of the group Veterans for Peace were escorted out of the Old South Meeting House in Boston Monday night after they attempted a citizens' arrest of former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. I went down in front and looked Donald Rumsfeld in the eye and said, "I'm making a citizen arrest," protested Golshang told CBB TV in Boston. "He lied us into Iraq. He lied about weapons of mass destruction. He lied about Saddam Hussein being involved in 9/11. Three of the protesters removed from the event were with Veterans for Peace, and a fourth was a member of Code Pink. One protester was arrested outside the event for allegedly using a bullhorn to assault a police officer. Most of the 300 people who had to buy a copy of Rumsfeld's book, Known and Unknown, to attend the event appeared to be fans. He's one of the greatest Americans that has ever lived," one woman said. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So we got a little video here.
She must
this.
Have been drinking something.
Not really. So we got something here, and I want to show it to you. I'll play it for you. This is at the Rumsfeld.
A rude welcome for former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, greeted by protesters before a Q&A session for his new book. Our Rondella Richardson witnessed the whole thing. So, Rondella, police were actually dragging people out of the Old South Meeting House tonight?
Last time, one man was arrested, charged with assault and battery on a police officer. Rumsfeld was out promoting this new book. However, inside, protesters taking issue with his politics. There was quite a ruckus, but Rumsfeld supporters took the mom booing back.
This is a war crime. Basically torture, intensive interrogation that not only began in Iraq and Afghanistan.
I'm making a speech.
I went down front and looked Donald Rumsfeld in the eye and said, "I'm making a citizen's arrest."
300 paid to be here. A total of four protesters had to be thrown out. They had to buy the former Secretary of Defense's book to get in. The Old South Meeting House is renowned for protests dating back to before the Revolution. Pausing for the police escorts out, Rumsfeld soldiered on with a Q&A program hosted by WRKO Radio.
He mentioned the Vietnam War. He mentioned the civil rights struggles. He was a member of Congress at the time. Then he became a presidential advisor.
He's one of the greatest Americans that has ever lived.
Known and Unknown is Rumsfeld's memoir.
His whole career, he's had near
criminal.
The epicenter of events that happened in the last 40 years in this country.
The book tour has a vocal following.
He lied us into Iraq. He lied about weapons of mass destruction. He lied about Saddam Hussein being involved with 9/11. The police were gentle. They didn't tackle us when we stood up.
And Rumsfeld had these questions all pre-screened. He did not take questions from the press. After an hour, he was quickly escorted out of a back door. Live in Boston, Rondella Richardson, News Center 5.
Tar and feather him out of town.
Absolutely. Another one. I don't know. I haven't previewed this one, but there's another one on this little bit. Boston had a war protest. It's again book signing. Okay, basically just a bunch of pictures.
It's just pictures.
Okay.
You ought to go to this, folks. It's really good.
Yeah, check this site out. It's Raw Play.
Raw
Replay. I'm sorry. Raw Replay. And check that out on their website. And if you happen to be going to my Facebook, I know.
Oh, they've been all day. Restaurant
Rumsfeld. He's out here making money off my water. You know Donald Rumsfeld here?
He's been all day. He's
war criminal. War criminal. Take him to the Hague.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, greeted by protesters before a Q&A session for his new book. Our Rondella Richardson witnessed the whole thing. So, Rondella, police were actually dragging people out of the Old South Meeting House tonight?
One man was arrested, charged with assault and battery on a police officer. Rumsfeld was out promoting this new...
We just heard that one, so that was an extension of it. But it really happened, folks. Unfortunately, they couldn't arrest the bastard. But
that's too bad. But they made a good try at it.
Yes, they did.
And they upset his... Remember, he was speaking in Los Angeles. That was Cheney.
Yeah, Rove and Cheney. They've gone after all these guys, Rove, Cheney, all of them. And tried to arrest all of them, which is great.
And Code Pink tried to arrest him.
Yeah, Rove and all of them. So Cheney, they've been after him too. Rumsfeld, Rove.
They can't travel outside of this country.
No. So from all of this, it's just that's the way it's going these days. Now I've got something. John hasn't called in yet. I've got something that I wanted to play, which I thought was really fascinating. Chemtrail, this is in line with what Johnny generally talks about, but chemtrail pilot admits to domestic terrorism. For those of you who are familiar with chemtrailing, you know what that means. It's aerial spraying aluminum oxide and barium salts and stuff up there, and trying to block out the sun. At the same time, dropping aluminum oxide, which is poisonous, down on the people and causing all kinds of problems. And I always wondered what these crazy bastards that were spraying this stuff were thinking about.
So now we'll find out.
So let's listen. This is a YouTube one. The chemtrail pilot admits domestic terrorism. Illegal spraying of humans.
That's if we can get it up. Sometimes what happens is...
Is there currently projects going on in the United States right now?
Yes, we have a project in North Dakota.
fallen management and failed investigation. Really? Minimize the effects of the bail, and we have one encounter.
So you can stop it, is what you're saying?
Minimize.
Minimize the effects of the bail.
Yeah.
Make it small.
Yeah.
But so can you cause it not to reach you?
No.
Yeah.
Not my experience.
So, well,
let's check if it is. Yeah, I don't know that they can.
Yeah, because right, so you know about that.
Yeah.
They said they stopped.
Yeah, well.
So we haven't perfected that in the next phase?
No.
Or you guys have?
Well, we haven't. I can't.
Really?
I can't say that too, but scientifically, when they explain it, it doesn't make sense.
Right. So when you get your orders, you just fly when they tell you to fly. Right?
For the most part. I mean, when we're working, we're on the contract with something, a state government, a state entity, a foreign government,
right,
or a water district, you know, that has hired us. So we have an area that we can only fly in.
Right.
Whatever your project area.
Right. And so you get contracts from the United States government, right?
No.
Oh, you don't?
No.
But other governments, other countries?
Yeah, like counties. Like North Dakota, there are four counties that get together, vote on it, levy their taxes, and then the state, through the state of North Dakota, they also get a little bit of funding. I think it's like 10%.
Really?
And then that's it. And they pay for it themselves.
So the state government pays for it?
The county pays for it by voting on it and levying mills.
Really?
Yeah. Now, some places, the water district will take their, I don't know where their money comes from exactly, but like a watershed area.
Right.
And they'll take probably taxes as well, and they'll set it up, vote on it, yep, we're going to do this project.
So
some places are power companies, like hydro water companies, they'll pay for it themselves.
Right.
And Calgary's insurance company pays for it.
So I saw the thing out there, you have the mine ones too?
Yes.
That one out there, I saw in the parking lot.
Yes, that's for snowmen in the mountains.
Really?
Yeah.
And I'll pull the silver iodide. Yeah. I saw a thing on Shasta County, California. Mount Shasta. I'm not sure, but it's in California.
Yeah.
Right below Mount Shasta. You ever hear about that? There was a big thing about it.
That's enough. This, I'm not really sure if I was looking at this, if this guy even knows what they're talking about. What he's at the center of spraying, but these guys are doing private spraying, whereas and they're doing cloud seeding, stuff. But this is not the chemtrails that they're throwing in there. This is not.
It is a form of chemtrails.
It's
but
a form
not,
of weather modification, but it's not the government project.
It's chemical spraying, but not exactly the same as what
exactly.
We're thinking
it's
about.
I don't think it relates to that. So. But on this particular site, it's saying that it is, but, it's really questionable. So anyway, let's see. Indicting the Israeli criminal banking network. I recently said Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke will take over the bailout of the Rothschild-owned European banks from the Germans, who are resisting Bernanke, will swap trillions of dollars in freshly printed Bernanke bucks for euro
bad debts.
He will continue printing dollars until the dollar, the pound, and the euro are worthless. When the bailouts are over, you will have nothing but the Rothschilds and their fellow members of the Israeli banking crime family will own everything, including your children. To divert the justifiable wrath of the 7 billion non-Jews, the Zionist crime family will then need a war to solve their problems. And the obvious target will be Iran. Right?
Kind of scary.
Yeah, it is kind of scary. Well, let's see what this is all about. Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, well, thank you. It could happen.
Video Rebels blog. And hang on a second here. Okay.
Indicting the Israel criminal bank. When the bailouts are over, and to divert the justifiable wrath of the 7 billion non-Jews, the Zionist crime family will have to have a war to solve their problem, the obvious target being Iran. I have said before that U.S. military will not allow Israel to attack Iran. Let me explain why. On 9/11, Israel brazenly bragged of their declaration of war against America and the world. They sent live video footage of the planes hitting the North and South Towers to the Bush administration. Dr. Richard Fuse, who was the CIA handler for Susan Lautner, saw those Israeli videos and immediately and rightfully concluded that Israel did 9/11. You might remember that one morning of 9/11, Bush said he saw a video on the monitor of the first plane hitting the North Tower before he entered the classroom in Florida. The general public did not see Flight 11 crash into the North Tower until 24 hours later, when the No Debt Brothers brought documentary footage
was released.
Since 9/11, Dr. Alan Zabrowski, a former director of studies in the U.S. War College, has come forward and publicly accused Israel of doing 9/11. Dr. Zabrowski is partially of Jewish descent. I maintain that 9/11 was the third in a series of criminal Israeli banking network crimes against America and the world. The first of these crimes was the assassination of President Kennedy. John Fitzgerald Kennedy was killed on November 22, 1963. He had issued Executive Order 11110 on June 4, 1963, which returned the power of the sovereign to issue currency to the Treasury from the privately owned Federal Reserve Bank. JFK issued U.S. Treasury notes, which were non-interest-bearing, to replace the Federal Reserve notes, which were interest-bearing, and required a debt to the FED and required a debt to the FED
to the Fed
to be created. If the bankers had not killed him as they did Lincoln, we would have no public debt and not understand a 23% unemployment rate. After the bankers killed JFK, his debt-free currency was recalled.
I keep making the point in public and in print that everyone else fears to whisper, even in secret. Kennedy was murdered on the anniversary of the day the bankers first met on November 22, 1910, in a private rail car that was to take them to Jekyll Island to draft the legislation they hired politicians would eventually pass in 1913. My point is that the bankers were giving us a message by killing JFK on the anniversary of a secret meeting, and the message is that they own America. They control the money and have the absolute right to kill any American at any time for any reason, and that includes the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we know another motive for killing JFK. Mordecai Vanunu said Israel wanted Kennedy killed because he opposed nuclear weapons program. It is forbidden to stand between Israel and their right to launch World War III and kill billions of people. Mass murder is their joy, their destiny, and their sole reason for being on this planet. At least this is what we can conclude from studying their behavior. This is kind of funny. The second step in Israel's declaration of war against America and the world was the North American Free Trade Act. 1994. Since the date, America has lost 50,000 manufacturing plants. America has a little over 3,000 countries with an average population of counties, over 100,000 people. If you divide 3,000 into 50,000, you get an average loss of 16 to 17 manufacturing plants per county, closing and going overseas. This has destroyed local tax bases, government revenues, and jobs, resulting in millions of unemployed and millions of foreclosed homes. And the Israel banking crime family sent all the jobs overseas to the only way to pay to
make
so
money is to participate in their banker bubble fraud machine.
Right.
First was the dot-com swindle. Alan Greenspan, the former Fed chairman, created money widely to keep the tech stocks up beyond all reason until it was time to elect Zionist lackey and war criminal George Bush. Then Greenspan tightened the money supply, drove down the stock market before Election Day, and became more responsible for electing Bush than even Karl Rove. Greenspan then allowed the Israeli banking crime family to create the mortgage bubble. The point is that the Israel crime network sent all of the America's jobs overseas, so there would be no means for anyone to earn money except by participating in their swindles, which have stolen tens of trillions of dollars from Americans.
Our unemployment rate will soon soar past 30% from its current 23% is of no concern to the bankers. They did not care when at least 3 million Americans died of starvation in the Great Depression, which they also created. And I have said that this next depression could be called the Greater Starvation. I didn't know about the 3 million Americans who starved to death during the Great Depression.
I didn't either.
My estimate is that if America does not learn to say no to Israel, 9 million Americans will die of starvation and 3 million will commit suicide rather than starve to death. If Americans do not resist evil, one day in the near future, Ben Bernanke's Federal Reserve notes will go to zero value and you will be a debt slave. I previously said, the fundamental fact of your existence as a modern man or woman is that the bankers of New York and London want to reduce you to debt slavery. And the bankers,
well, we know that.
The bankers want America to lose World War III, so your slavery will be sealed. And that is why they passed NAFTA. They wanted America's supply lines to stretch 8,000 miles to China on a dodgy credit card so we would lose the next war. But the Israelis were so brazen in their admissions that they did 9/11 that I seriously doubt the U.S. military will allow the banking crime family to attack Iraq or do anything to destroy what is left of America, a once proud nation. Please help to solidify U.S. military support for our resistance to the bankers. Please explain to anyone you know in the military that the reason for passing NAFTA was to industrialize America so the United States would lose World War III and America would become more easily slaves. And I will discuss the third step in Israeli Declaration Against Humanity in the next essay in this series. And this is the video. There's a video as well that goes with it, and we can play that another time. But I want to thank you. We got John Brennan joining us right here.
We'll put him right on.
And we will put him on in just 1 second. And hang on a second. Right,
we can put him on right
there. Yeah, I got him here. All right. Hey, Johnny, you with us?
Good evening, Leo. Good evening, Lila.
Hey, John.
Well, once again, folks, we're going to be talking a little bit about weather modification, perhaps, and we're going to do a few other topics. One of the topics might be the coming microchip population, and we'll veer into some various other things as we go along, probably. I must say at this point, I'm very glad to have heard your previous clip there, what you just talked about the Israeli involvement in 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
It was. I'm just trying to turn off my music here. I'm having a little background computer problems as I speak. So, excuse me here. I don't know why it won't go away, but it won't go away. Hold on. We got it. There. We finally got rid of the background noise. Now I can think.
Yeah, no, I read that they actually got. Bush was actually given proof that the Israelis did it, you know. They shoved it right in his face.
It's going to come out sooner or later. It's 10 years down the road now, and, you know, the saddest part is that they got away with murder.
He brought it up, three or four years ago, when Cass Ingram wrote that book, Wrongly Blamed.
Wrongly Blamed, very good book, yes.
Talked about it several times on the show, and it was the Israeli involvement.
Now we're so far down the road that people just sort of shrug.
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah, once past the 10-year mark, it's like the serial killer has gone free. Not only did they get away with taking down the Twin Towers and Building 7, blowing up the Pentagon and whatever else they did with the plane that goes
really?
Shanksville with no wreckage, we don't know. There's two missing planes in the events of 9/11. At the Pentagon, there was no wreckage, no plane. And incidentally, I can bring up a clip in a minute by CNN. CNN that day did several clips immediately after the incident. Their CNN Pentagon correspondent would be Jamie McIntyre, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Right, you know what? Let me play that for you right now. This is it's entitled, it was a video clip they'd rather you didn't see or hear. So if there's anybody out there who still thinks the 9/11 events are sort of like just conspiracy theory, this is a clip that was played once and once only, Obviously, you'll understand why, because the powers that be control the banks, they control the media, and thus they control your mind through the television. And this particular clip was live, maybe within a half an hour, 10 minutes or whatever, of the so-called plane hitting the Pentagon. And it was an eyewitness reporter. Here's what he said.
How much of the plane actually impacted the building?
You know, it might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon. The only site is the actual side of the building that's crashed in, and as I said, the only pieces left that you can see are small enough that you could pick up in your hand. There are no large tail sections, wing sections, a fuselage, nothing like that anywhere around, which would indicate that the entire plane crashed into the side of the Pentagon and then caused the side to collapse. Now, even though if you look at the pictures of the Pentagon, you see that the floors have all collapsed, that didn't happen immediately. It wasn't until almost about 45 minutes later that the structure was weakened enough that all of the floors collapsed.
Jeff, it's a United Airlines plane is believed to be at that site outside
Pittsburgh. It's Shanksville now we're talking
about. Exactly right, John, with 45 people total on board. And one of the more profound things today, the imprint of terrorism seared not only on Wall Street but also on Main Street. Here you have an area 80 miles to the southeast of Pittsburgh, and this plane, which went down at about 10 o'clock this morning. We have rescue vehicles that came in earlier in the day, and they have turned up nothing. No one believed to be alive from this crash. Some of the media just getting back to the scene, which is about a quarter of a mile up on a hill back behind me, and so some of the first pictures just starting to come in within the last hour. I want to get quickly to Chris Kanicki. He's a photographer with the Pittsburgh affiliate, a Fox affiliate. He was back there just a couple of minutes ago, and Chris, I've seen the pictures. It looks like there's nothing there except for a hole in the ground.
Basically, that's right. The only thing you could see from where we were was a big gouge in the earth and some broken trees. We could see some people walking around in the area, but from where we could see, there wasn't much left.
Any large pieces of debris at all?
No, there was nothing that you could distinguish that a plane had crashed there.
So, you know, these are clips that we're supposed to put out of our minds and tell ourselves that a plane crashed at the Pentagon and left no debris.
Pennsylvania or whatever. Yeah.
Right, Shanksville, Pennsylvania, is a big gouge in the ground, which, and what I think will explain to that explosion was they either had a bomb like a bunker buster already planted there in the field. The area which the plane allegedly crashed in was owned by the Rockefellers.
How convenient.
How convenient. So the bankers do have involvement. It's not hard to plant a bomb in a field and tell somebody a plane has crashed there. They probably flew over a number of planes overhead to make the public get distracted enough to not know what's going on. And when they're asked questions, oh, yeah, I saw a plane fly over. It's just like the Pentagon. They flew a plane over the Pentagon, but not into it. Now, whether the plane that flew over it fired off a missile and there was a bomb in the building as well, which it does appear to be what happened, and that's from a witness that was inside the building, that was April Gallup, and she, I think it was earlier this year, went to a court hearing where she was in actually New Haven, Connecticut, and the case was thrown out because I believe the charge she wanted brought against the people like Donald Rumsfeld was that they were negligent in their duty because she knew it was not a plane, but to try and prove it was one thing. So the only thing, she was so shocked, I mean, her young child was almost killed. And she said she could smell cordite in the building, which is an explosive residue. And some of the people who were in the military would have, you know, experience with that sort of smell as regards, we know other smells, you know, at our work, so to speak. Well, she took this case to New Haven, and the case was dismissed by a judge. His name was Judge Walker, and it turns out he's related to the
Bush family.
The Bush family, George W. Walker Bush. It was a complete, you know, I mean, you couldn't believe how these guys,
they're
all
everywhere, aren't they?
From Yale, you know, the Skull and Bones town, sort of, mm-hmm. or or capital of it's a Freemasonry sort of a crowd, secret society, whatever you want to call it. It's a boys' club, and you're not in it, as George Carlin would say. But they've really, really done a number on people's minds that the public, if they could just sit and watch these photos, these are pretty good photos on the video of the live events of that morning in 9/11, and I just find it so
sad. Where is that video, John? How did I get it?
This video, well, I actually had this video. Anybody who was home the day of 9/11 that had a VCR at the time, I didn't have a DVD player, but I remember because I was off work that day. I think I had just quit my job or something on a Monday, and it was Tuesday morning it happened. And right away, I just always used to just record events like that, especially when they started to say they thought it was a terrorist attack.
So this is your video.
Well, this is actually up on YouTube now. Somebody has found the clips.
Oh, it is. Oh, that's great. Okay, so what's the name of it?
Well, you can find this clip yourself. The title is 9/11 Video Clips Dan Rather Would Rather Not Show You. A little bit hard to say, but 9/11 Video Clips Dan Rather Would Rather Not Show You. Of course, Dan Rather is in business anymore, as they say. But
yeah, he's not in business anymore.
So this is a video that's probably been up a few years. I just came across it before the show because I thought, you know, I haven't touched on the subject of 9/11 in a while. And when I just tuned in a few minutes ago, I heard you guys talking about the Israeli involvement. And yes, they were involved. The Mossad is involved in an awful lot of assassinations. The French also. French do a lot of the dirty work for the British. It's kind of like they subcontract it out. It keeps it quieter that way, I think. But all of the secret service agencies around the world, I think, have at some point or other been involved in state-sponsored terrorism. And it's just got to a much larger scale with the events of 9/11, when they do it in broad daylight and instead of assassinating a president or some political person who's running for president like they did in Afghanistan, they have got to the point now where they will take out, I dare say, an entire city with a nuclear device and not think twice.
Yes. Now, John, did you go down to Hartford several weeks ago when they had that sort of summit on 9/11? Did you go to that?
No, I didn't. I tell you, my own feeling about the 9/11 truth movement is that it's been very, very heavily infiltrated to guide the people in a certain direction. And I believe, in a way, we may have been misled to keep looking at Building 7. Alex Jones, InfoWars, definitely said, oh, Building 7 is the weakest link. We got them on that one. But really, I'm beginning to wonder. It hasn't got anywhere in 10 years. It might be time to look the other direction, go back at the Pentagon and the Shanksville, Pennsylvania. There perhaps is more evidence there. And we have these leaders that step up and try and guide us and lead us, architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, Richard Gage. Okay, overall they do a good job, but they definitely do not give much on the Pentagon. It's like the magician. Look at my hand over here. They're leading us like away from the evidence, I'm afraid.
I agree with you on that. I think they're also trying to divert the attention away from the Israeli connection.
Yeah,
you don't hear about that. You know, in fact, I don't think Griffin has actually indicted the Israelis on that.
No, and he won't. No, I think we have to, perhaps at this point, after 10 years, realize that whether it's David Ray Griffin, Richard Gage, Architects and Engineers, 9/11 Truth, and all 1,500 of them, I don't just mean Richard Gage. We have, who else has been a lead?
5,000 Architects and Engineers.
Right, but we have the radio personalities.
Webster Tarpley and Jim Mars. And, I got to tell you the truth. I believe in Jim Mars, and that's one guy that I has a lot of integrity as far as I'm concerned. From what I've known, and I've interviewed him a number of times, but he's came out with the real stuff. But I think what's happening is the, I really think we're being diverted away from the Israeli involvement, you know.
Perhaps if we look at the Pentagon, it might lead us to that. We don't know. The Pentagon incident is very strange. You can
extremely so. And they never released any tapes or any of the video.
Well,
because of that, it tells you, you know, that they're culpable. They're
in hiding something.
Well, the Pentagon is, you know, one of the largest military establishments, you know, bases. I don't think you call it a base, but it's the infrastructure of the intelligence for the United States, which is the biggest military enterprise in the world. And it's got probably more cameras per square inch than your average Kmart, at least, you know, and your Walmart. You're on camera there every 15 feet you go, probably. They're telling us that they only have one video shot of the plane going into the building, and it's like blurred, and it's a gust of smoke, and that's the plane. Take it or leave it. You know, good little sheep, go to sleep. This is what happened.
Obey.
They might as well flash that across the screen like a George Orwell said in 1984. You know, Big Brother, obey. This is what happened. This is the official story. War is peace. It's just a big mind control thing, is all.
Yeah, doublespeak, you know.
It is. It's doublespeak. But when you start to ask the questions, like I'm asking, show me three other angles of the plane. They can't, or they won't. And I know they could even Photoshop it and make it up 10 years later.
Yeah.
Certainly could now. And if we press them enough, maybe they will fake a plane hitting the building, because, you know, the military of this country works very, very much with Hollywood, always has.
And they never released the video from the gas station or from the place across the street.
Yeah, there was a hotel that FBI confiscated the videos within 20
minutes.
Was
it a hotel?
Oh, right. So,
yeah.
So
everywhere, all of them. There are
that.
Over 80, something like 80 cameras that witnessed that. And all of them were confiscated.
Yeah, so you know, I mean, these are questions that the American people and the world's people have to ask, because if our entire lives are being changed because of the events of 9/11, whether it's the Patriot Act, our driver's licenses in Connecticut now, we have to go for some special sort of
There's an RFID tag on it. Yeah,
and it's the precursor to, you know, eventually we'll, after they pull another attack and get away with it, we'll have to be microchipped for our safety, of course.
I don't think that'll happen, but that's
it's coming. In fact, I'll use that. Look at the time. I have 5 minutes to get into my next piece. I'm sorry for skipping here, but while we're still on the air officially, I know we can talk after 10 o'clock. I'm just going to talk a little bit about predictive programming and the human microchipping agenda. And, you know, I had a little audio clip here. Bring it up for you in a second. It's basically, "We the People Will Not Be Chipped." And they present this video called Predictive Programming and the Human Microchipped Agenda. I was hoping I could skip the intro here, so I'm going to try. I'm going to try and
monitored more easily.
I'll just see if I can back it up here, because I know in the interest of time, I'm not going to be able to play all of this. So let's just hit it right here.
Openness and honesty, and patting themselves on the back for the wonderful service they are doing humanity by exporting democracy to the Middle East.
This is the intro to how you might be microchipped in the future.
It used to be merely hinted at by the various strategically positioned front men and women. Nowadays, it is discussed semi-openly by today's front people and can no longer be ignored by the human beings who happen to be alive today. The powers behind this utilize the technology that has been made available to the general public to have us all numbered and to have us believe that it's all for our own good. That way we can all be monitored more easily and believe it's all for our own safety. Enter the Verichip Corporation, currently calling itself Positive ID, the implantable microchip company. Today, IBM is closely associated with Positive ID, the implantable microchip company, as well as the dream of a global smart system of total and constant surveillance of everything and everybody, cunningly marketed as harmless Uber efficiency, as one would expect. In reality, what little remains of our freedom is under attack. For the good of humanity, this process must not only it must be reversed before it's too late.
Let's build a smarter planet.
The right to privacy, for example, and everything that goes with it, is slowly disappearing down the memory hole, aided by the social conditioning provided by incomprehensibly popular reality television programs, in which fame-hungry members of the public and or ailing celebrities are continuously filmed being pointless in exchange for their 15 minutes of synthetic fame. Mockery disguised as irony dictates that the most successful of them all is called Big Brother. What else? The all-seeing eye is, of course, present in the form of a logo, not only in the program itself, but also of the production company, End 'Em All, keeping an eye on the end of them all. Interestingly, the contestants on the Spanish version of Big Brother were called on to promote the introduction of the VIP VeraChip at the Barcelona Baja Beach Club in March of 2004. The idea is that once you agree to have a microchip implanted in your arm, you can access the VIP area. And never again will you be dragged down to the level of having to deal with the monstrous inconvenience of carrying money around, or a credit card. People, nay, VIPs, can choose to pay for their drinks with implanted chips instead. Presumably this opportunity is available to everyone, great, rich and poor, free and bond. There's another Baja Beach club in Rotterdam, Holland, playing the same fiddle. Managing director Joe Van Gallen sees no problem at all. He believes that in 20 years' time, it will be normal to be chipped at birth. It seems that many people are more interested in the latest gadget or fashion accessory than their rights and their freedom. Too many of us simply don't think about rights, as long as we can be left alone to get on with our lives. But therein lies the problem. This vision of the architects of the New World Order doesn't involve leaving us alone to get on with our lives. It's about dictating to us what is no longer permissible, how we will be allowed to live our lives, and eventually, whether we will be allowed to live our lives.
You must all know half a dozen people at least, who are no use in this world, who are more trouble than they are worth. Just put them there and say, sir or madam, now will you be kind enough to justify your existence? If you can't justify your existence, if you're not pulling your weight in the social boat, if you're not producing as much as you can do, or less than some more, then clearly we cannot use the big organization of our society for the purpose of keeping you alive, because...
I'm just going to cut it there because I know you're at the top of the arch.
Yeah, it's getting kind of hard to hear, but and we've already run out of time on the show, so but it was a little tough to hear in the last part.
Yeah, that last part was a speech by a reenactment of George Bernard Shaw talking about eugenics, doing away with those in society who didn't pull their weight. So if you weren't a straight-A student in the eyes of the Illuminati, you might have to be eliminated.
Yeah, it's amazing how you became such a famous celebrity. You know?
Who is this now?
Even though you're such a miserable human being.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, George Bernard Shaw.
Yeah, he was more than a poet and a writer. He had some other very interesting friends, I think.
Yeah.
Madame Blavatsky. Got a number of people in the secret societies from Germany.
Hmm.
I live near his house in Dublin.
Oh, yeah?
Charles Wood was across from my house in Terranor in Dublin City.
John, great. Thanks for. I'm glad you're back on with us, look forward to more of your stuff.
Yeah.
The one there on the microchip agenda, maybe next week I could play that again at the beginning, and I'd like to run at least 16 minutes of it, and then we
can... Yeah, that's fine, but you know what I wish you would do? That article you sent me on the blowing up of the underground tunnels there in the underground cities.
Yeah, I got a verification of that tonight.
Did you? I was hoping that maybe you could spend some time next week and bring us up. That to me is extremely fascinating. I think something that we should pursue on this show.
How did you get that verified, John?
It just came tonight. It was scientists confirmed Fulford's story of nuclear attack on Washington's underground sanctuary.
Really?
I haven't got a name of the base, but from my own investigation over the year, there's an underground city called Mount Weather. which is not known very much by the public. I had some stuff I printed off the internet many years ago talking about the city could hold 35,000 people. In the event of a nuclear strike, the elite of Washington, D.C. would all go there. Apparently,
I remember you talked about that.
A long time ago, we talked about that. Now, they haven't mentioned Mount Weather, and there's another city on the West Coast somewhere. Are we still on there?
In Colorado, the one in the underground Colorado airport.
And I can read this if we still have time to talk on air. Are we still on air?
Not really, but it's kind of like it's already like 10.
Okay.
We'll talk about it next time.
I'll send it to you, and you guys can look at it. I'll send it right after the show.
Yeah, that way we can talk about it. But I'd love to. I really, really think that's an important thing that we might want to discuss because. It's not being talked about anywhere, but we have a kind of an exclusive on that.
Okay.
I'd love to be able to talk about it tomorrow, or next week, rather.
This story was put out by Benjamin Fulford, and we were a little suspicious because there's a lot of disinformation going out. So people listening to the show, I want to let them know. I try not to be too easily fooled after, going down all the rabbit holes over the years. There's a lot of guys who'll lead you to really weird stories that go nowhere, and you don't want to get involved with these guys.
Well, that's why, I sent that over to George,
Yeah.
And asked what he thought about it. He said he wasn't sure. He didn't want to get too excited about it because of he didn't trust Buford.
Well, I had the guy who was it sent me the story originally? I can't recall now. But I sent it to, I won't mention the contact. He's in California, and he's very, very informative. He sends me a lot of articles that have turned out to be 100% accurate. He said that he thought Fulford had, in the past, not a very good record of, being on the truth out of 100%. So I backed off the story a bit. Now I got an email tonight from the guy in California who said the story looks like it's carrying some more water than we thought.
Oh, great.
He's given
it. So with that in mind, I think we might want to pursue it.
I'll send you the email I got tonight from my California contact. And if this turns out to be something that is happening and it's true, the public will not know about it probably maybe for a year. Who knows how long they can keep this?
If they can keep it secret forever,
But what will be going on? It'll be like an infight amongst the mafia, but it won't be with little shotguns. This is going to be a very, very serious. It might be a civil war within the ranks of the military, like a coup, a division within. Something serious will go down, and sooner or later the press is not going to be able to keep the cap on this. May be people within the United States government who know, just like we do, that the 9/11 was done to this country, and the secrets that were stolen, from secret bases by Israeli agents, actually.
Sounds like these guys are the white hats that want to protect this country.
Well, we hope
get rid of the shit that's been piling up on it for the last 100 years.
Right.
This
could be huge.
It's worth pursuing, John.
Yeah.
We'll devote that full half hour to that.
Yeah.
If you'd like to, I could do that.
I would like to.
Okay. I can probably
reading the articles, bringing us up to date on it, and if there's anything, we got three articles on that already.
I probably have a few more I didn't even show you, but I didn't want to go with the story until I, see how it develops as it goes along. At this point, I'm actually surprised at the red lights flickering brighter and brighter. It looks like it's a real story.
Well, we can.
Always, it really is scary.
We can always put a waiver on that. Just saying, like we're doing right now. Just say that. We're not certain of this story, but here it is. You decide.
It started with sort of a 20% sort of a truth. It's already up to 50%, and I'm beginning to think it could be on sort of a headline story.
Yeah, may well be. So I think I mean, remember, you remember how long it took for 9/11 to come around? Right.
Absolutely. It takes 3 or 4 years sometimes for people to realize
something like that. Right. So I mean, and that was out in plain sight, whereas this is underground and hidden. You know.
That's correct.
And it won't be until we start seeing either the assassinations or the arrests.
Arrest.
Of these major figures. That will, you know, that's when things will happen, but...
Or the quiet disappearance of people.
Well that's right. What really has to happen is we have to have arrests of people like Henry Kissinger, the entire Bush family, probably right up to, the, you know, Barbara Bush. Everybody has to
right,
be...
But you know what? Just quite frankly, if George W. Bush vanished from the face of the earth right now,
mm-hmm.
and the media refused to and wouldn't cover it,
nobody would care. No.
Nobody would care. Nobody would know.
Well, you know, it's not just him. It's all of the people, the cabal, the Zbigniew Brzezinski's, the press people who held water for them, so to speak. You know,
right.
whether it's Dan Rather, these people lied, probably knowingly, to the American people. That's treason.
Yeah.
Well, we'll devote that. We'll devote a few full half hour to it next weekend. Right now, we're not streaming, so.
Okay.
We're just on the archives, but I'd like to do that, John, if you don't mind.
Oh, that'd be good.
And, okay. And
right,
my phone is
up a whole half hour.
And Leo's phone is just about out of power, so we do have to sign off.
Okay, I'll try and get you some audio clips on the whole thing as well.
That would
be great.
Send that over to us, too, and I'll review it this week.
Did you listen to the Benjamin Fulford audio?
Yes.
Okay, so I don't want to play that one. I'll find you something new then. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's good, too. But if you want to play that, that's fine. But I think it's very, very important that we get this on the air.
Okay.
All right. At least we'll, we may be one of the first to have it.
Okay, I think it could be something really important.
Yeah, it might be good, yeah. Okay, Johnny.
Okay.
Thanks for being on. I'm sorry. Yeah, thanks for being on, John, and we'll talk to you next
week. I'm a bit
late
calling. I couldn't find the number here on the piece of paper. Then I realized it's on the screen.
It's all right, John.
Okay.
It's all right. You're a little rusty, that's all.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
All right.
Have a good night, Johnny.
All
thanks
right.
for being on.
Good job there, Johnny.
Right. Yep.
Good night.
Good night. I want to thank everybody who joined us, and I'll wish you a pleasant evening as well, and good night.
And I say good night, too, and talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.